And it's not that we haven't already begun with the rest, because five companies already control over two-thirds of the programming on primetime television, and the networks are clearly winning the upper hand over local television broadcasters. This issue of control is critical. Take away the protections that exist today against concentration, the ones that still remain, and one company could dominate a region's access to information by controlling its radio station, its television station, its newspaper, and its cable system. And those who believe that the internet, with its dynamism and openness alone, can save us from this fate, should realize that the dominating internet news sources right now are controlled by the same groups that control radio, television, newspapers, and cable. And what about that vaunted 500-channel universe of cable TV saving us? 90% of the top 50 channels are owned by the same giants that own the networks and the big cable distributors. More channels are great, but when they're owned by the same people, cable doesn't protect localism, editorial diversity, or competition. Yet Chairman Powell and his allies at the Commission are charging ahead, seriously short-circuiting the process. When I suggested last September that we all go out and visit local media markets and whole field hearings and see for ourselves what was left of localism and diversity and competition, talk to the many experts who live, believe it or not, outside the Beltway, I was told no, and the press was told that my idea was old-fashioned, anachronistic, like a whistle-stop tour from the previous century. We didn't need to do that. We could just stay down at the FCC, look at the comments filed by those folks who read the Federal Register, and get it over with. So we'll vote June 2nd, and once the proceeding hits the street, I think you can prepare to see a veritable gold rush of media company buying and selling. Just this past weekend, an analyst at Deutsche Bank predicted the transfer of hundreds of television stations as large conglomerates strive to become even larger. There'll be swaps galore. And although I haven't seen it yet, there's a new Merrill Lynch report out, and the title of it is called The Gold Rush Begins. The Wall Street Journal referenced those same sentiments when it reported that merger and acquisition firms are calling media companies saying, "We want to be your broker." Well, maybe that's what brokers are supposed to do. But I just wonder who's going to be America's broker in all of this. And somehow I still have the quaint idea that maybe the FCC is supposed to pay some attention to that. But you know, I still have hope that maybe we can turn the tide. And maybe I'm too optimistic, too hopeful, too innocent, I don't know. But here's what I see tonight. Across this broad land, momentum is finally beginning to grow on this issue. It's belated, but it's there. Grassroots efforts are beginning to produce results. As Commissioner Adelstein and I travel around the country holding our own hearings and attending forums like this one tonight, hundreds of people turn out to express their opinion about consolidation. It's amazing how many come, because the chairman refused to give us any funds for hearings. So we had to do the few that we did on a shoestring, and then we were fortunate enough to be invited to several forums like this around the country. And I can tell you this, the public comment that takes place at these hearings has been overwhelmingly concerned and about further relaxation. That shows up in the formal record of our commission. We hear that this proceeding has now generated well over 137,000 comments, more than any other proceeding in the history of the FCC, they say. And the chairman was fond of citing all of those comments, sort of like, you know, we have all of these in-depth comments, and really there's a lot of support for relaxing the protections. So we looked into it, and guess how they break down. All but about 100 of those are from individuals. There are about 100 organizations, maybe divided in half between the big media companies and their allies, and then on the other side, the creative artists and the labor unions and groups that are concerned against further consolidation. That leaves about, I don't know, 136,900. I don't think we've got 50. I haven't seen any, but they tell me there's a few in there. There may be 40 or 50 even that are in favor of further relaxation. That means the comments are running like 99.9% against and 99.9% in favor of putting these proposals out for comment before the commission moves ahead to vote on them. We've heard now from almost 150 members of Congress to slow down and put the chairman's proposals out for public comment before we vote. Dozens of organizations have asked us to do the same thing. Children Now, the Writers Guild of America, the Parents Television Council, the Communications Workers of America, the Conference of Catholic Bishops, the Center for the Creative Community, Common Cause, the National Rifle Association, sent in 125,000 cards this week, National Organization for Women, National Association of Black-Owned Broadcasters, the list goes on and on. City councils are passing resolutions to this effect, and thank you so much for the one from Atlanta. We've got similar ones in Chicago, Philadelphia, Seattle, and last week a whole state actually went on record against what we're doing. This issue is not, and here's the interesting thing about it, it is not Republican or Democrat. It is not liberal or conservative. It is not North or South. It is not young or old. It is an American issue. And if big media would tell the rest of America about it, it would be a grassroots issue like we haven't seen in many a year. If we had done our job at the FCC of outreach and informing you that we were messing with something pretty important regarding the future of your media, and if big media, particularly the television networks, who up until now have done a pretty poor job of covering this, almost no job at all, if they had met their public interest obligations, we'd probably have 10 million outraged comments at the FCC. Now, Chairman Powell often says, well, you know, we're not a public opinion polling agency. My concern is with satisfying the court of law. And I agree that we need to satisfy the court of law in the inevitable challenge that will come to these rules. But we do need also to satisfy the court of public opinion. And it's abundantly clear that the American people oppose relaxation of these views. We can still be an independent agency. We don't weigh the comments that come in and say, okay, this one weighs more, so we're going that way. But in a democratic society, when you have all these members of Congress, the people's representatives, all these organizations writing in and phoning in, then you at least put your proposals out for some comment before you vote on them. Just as this is becoming a grassroots issue, just as people are starting to become aware of what's about to be inflicted upon them, we got closer and closer to that artificial June 2nd deadline. Wouldn't the country be much better served by putting these proposals out for comment for a limited period, say 60 or 90 days, so we can get it right, understand the consequences of the new rules, both the intended consequences and those invariably more troubling unintended ones, and let these ideas bathe in the sunshine of public debate? But our request, Commissioner Adelstein and I asked the chairman, let's have a public comment period so we can look at this. He said no. So we finally got our item to look at, the proceeding, the other day, a week ago Monday, the last possible day, the three-week deadline that the chairman had to give it to us so that he could vote on June 2nd. And it says, for internal distribution only, eyes only, and you know, you could be prosecuted for releasing it and all that. And we're told, you know, this is the way the commission usually does business. Well, I submit this is too important to be treated on a business as usual basis. Let me take just two more minutes to lay out a few principles that I hope this proceeding will cover. First, let's start with the premise that it's the people's property we're dealing with. We're not talking about airwaves that a broadcaster owns. We're not talking about airwaves that a company owns. We're talking about public airwaves and how they should be used to advance the interests of our citizens. No broadcaster, no company has a God-given right, any right, to use these airwaves for strictly commercial purposes. Yes, stations can be run as a business, The country made that decision long ago. We weren't going to have a public media industry, subsidized industry. It's going to be part of the great capitalist system. And that's fine, except this is a very special and a very different business. And it's different because, one, the people own the airwaves, and number two, the broadcasters are given a license to use that and to make a dollar in return for advancing the public interest. And that's where the shortfall is. The Supreme Court laid out the direction for us long ago when it said, and this is a quote from the Supreme Court, "It's the purpose of the First Amendment to preserve an uninhibited marketplace of ideas in which truth will ultimately prevail, rather than countenance monopolization of that market, whether it be by the government itself or a private licensee." And if we began each debate at the FCC within that context, we'd do a much better job as a regulatory commission. Second, we need to address the fundamentals of media concentration. We're dancing around the edges of it. Look what's happened. Step by step, rule by rule, bit by bit, over the last 20 years, we have given a green light to the forces of concentration and consolidation. Until now, a handful of giant conglomerates stand astride our nation's media. And at the same time, we have allowed fundamental protections that existed to wither and to die. Public interest requirements like going out and ascertaining the needs and the desires of the local audience. The Fairness Doctrine, teeing up controversial issues, providing demonstrated diversity in programming, enforcing protections for our children against violent and indecent programming. Just a few of the safeguards we once had, but have no more. And these things go to the heart and soul of our media and what real diversity and localism and competition mean. So I want us to deal with these issues expansively, go to the basics of the issue, and do justice to this huge question of media ownership. This is not some arcane dispute over numbers. It is not a hard or difficult issue to understand. It's not about corporate bottom lines and how consumers are going to be delivered to advertisers. Some commenters in this proceeding have addressed the need to require more independent programming in our airwaves so that a few companies do not control all of the creative entertainment that we see. Those proposals, that proposal, deserves serious consideration in this proceeding. I don't want the chairman or anybody to come and punt that to another proceeding that might or might not ever take place. It should not be punted to another day. For years, this commission limited horizontal concentration, which is the distribution of the programming, and vertical, which is production of the content concentration. Then we took away the vertical safeguards, their history, and now we're loosening the horizontal. And the result is the same company controls the distribution and the content of the programming. Where is the balance there? There is none. Others have suggested, and this is an idea that I am really attracted to, the need for an effective license renewal process under which the commission would once again actually consider the manner in which a station has served the public interest when it comes time to renew its license. You know, we used to do that. We used to do that every 3 years.
Michael Jacobs.
But the system has evolved, unfortunately, into one that is basically postcard license renewal every 8 years. And unless there's a fairly serious complaint against your station, you send in the papers, send in the postcard, and you get your license renewed. A real honest-to-God license renewal process predicated on advancing the public interest would do more for broadcasting than all of these other rules put together. And it would not, properly designed, it would not be micromanagement on a day-to-day basis. And this would be a comprehensive look when that license comes up for renewal. Have these folks really made a good faith effort on balance to serve the public interest? We should be talking about that in the present proceeding, not sometime in the future. There are so many answers that we just don't have when you look at this item. We haven't even asked all the questions. What are the effects on small business? take advertisers. You know, what are the effects on advertising rates in a consolidated environment? Many people tell us they go up. If they don't go up, others say, well, maybe they didn't go up for this one station, but these folks own six stations, so I got to have my ad on six stations. The prices do go up. Much more importantly, what are the possible effects on our children? You know, when this proceeding was launched last September, we searched in vain for the word children in the text. Couldn't find it. Yet some have suggested that there is a correlation between the rising tide of indecent and violent programming on the airwaves and the rising tide of media consolidation. That seems to ring true. I don't really know the answer to the question. But I do know this. We have no business voting on this item until we tee up that question and at least try to amass something of a credible record before we vote. What effects do technological change have on this ownership debate? You know, right now we're all talking about the coming transition to digital television. Well, there are some implications there. Wouldn't it make a difference if a station, instead of broadcasting one program stream, now has the capacity to broadcast five or six? Might not that have some effects on the competitive landscape in a particular media market? Don't know. Shouldn't we be looking at this? Why aren't we looking at it? Ask the chairman. What does further consolidation mean in terms of providing Hispanic Americans and African Americans and Asian Pacific Americans and Native Americans and other groups the kinds of programs and access and viewpoint diversity and career opportunities and ownership opportunities and even just advertising information about products and services that they need? This country's strength is, after all, its diversity. This country will succeed in the 21st century, not in spite of our diversity, but because of our diversity. Diversity is not a problem to be overcome. It's our greatest strength, and our media need to reflect that diversity and to nurture that diversity. It doesn't take any rocket science to understand that changing the rules of media consolidation is going to have far-reaching effects on different groups. Why not ask these questions before we vote, instead of having to come around on the other side of it and have to clean up the damage? Suppose for a moment that the Commission votes to remove or significantly modify the ownership limits on June 2nd. And suppose that turns out to be a mistake. How do you put the genie back in the bottle? You can't. Can't be done. That's why we need a national dialogue in these issues. We should be wrapping up that dialogue by now, not beginning it, but the point is that America needs to wrap its arms around this issue of who's going to control the media before we lose all ability to control how media serves the public interest. The time to do that is now, before the Commission approves the Chairman's proposals. We need to get this done right, far more compellingly than we need to get it done quickly. So we need this debate. We need it in Congress. There's a hearing tomorrow. I'm glad we're going to have another hearing. There's going to be some other events this week. We need it at the Commission. We need it among concerned industries. We need it in the media. We need it all across America with as many stakeholders as possible taking part as to what these changes should be. And in my book, every American is a stakeholder when the future of the media, something so key to our democracy, hangs in the balance. So I hope each of you will do your part and more to make it happen, because you can't afford not to. As was remarked, the City of Atlanta has provided a cyber bus just outside so you can submit comments directly to the record in this proceeding. We will take a tape of this back to Washington and make it a part of the record. Go out and visit that cyber bus, do that. But don't let it end there. You can't let it end there. You have to take what you learned tonight, take what you feel tonight, share it with others, encourage the fullest possible discussion we can have of this in the next 12 days and counting down before Chairman Powell closes the discussion and forces the vote. Talk it up. Call the radio stations, the talk radio stations. Write letters to the editor. Contact your decision makers and government officials. Get on the Internet. It's a wonderful, wonderful tool for spreading a message like this. It can make a difference. As an FCC commissioner, I have a duty to encourage this kind of discussion and to help build the record. But I think, as citizens, each and every one in this room has the same duty. Thank you very much.